What's happening, y'all? This is Jeffrey of Jeffrey TV, coming to you from a remote location. Is this the undisclosed location or is this the remote location? I forget. But happy Friday. Yesterday, I saw my mother's caregiver. It had been a while. For like a month or two, because I saw her since she seen me. And she was like, "Oh, you look good." And I was like, I wasn't surprised. I knew it. I know I look good. And I don't mean that, you know, I look good. Oh, Jeffrey looks so good. I know that I've lost weight and I'm, you know, I look more fit and my hair was cut. I just taking headshots. So my hair was cut and I was kind of groomed a little and I put on medium sized shirt and medium sized pants. So my clothes were fitting, you know, so I was looking trim. And so looking good is it more of a ego thing, even though I might have that too, but it was more of a, yeah, I know I've, you know, gotten to a certain level or whatever, a certain look. You know, with the weight loss and, you know, wearing clothes. Another thing I was thinking, I'm downsizing all my clothes, getting rid of all the size 38 pants. Well, most of them trying to, and all the large and extra large t-shirts and stuff that I have that may or may not fit bulky, get rid of them. I was thinking, it's about time for me to downsize my drawers too. I'm like, oh my, I haven't, changed draw size in probably 15 years. And I do remember now how the boxer briefs used to fit really tight. I'm just now remembering that as I'm recording this, how the boxer briefs used to fit tight. And now they just kind of fix like boxers. So it might be time. And I got like a whole unopened pack of large ones too. And I got draws I should have been throwing away. You know, but I figured they under my clothes. What the hell? I just throw them on. Nobody need to see them. Hell, I don't change them enough anyway. That's why I can go 2 months without washing clothes. Came out here, I ain't washed clothes since the last time I've been out here. Stuff was piling up. I was seeing stuff in there I forgot I had. Because between the combination of me wearing the same clothes all the time and the amount of clothes I have now, you know, washing clothes is, you know, whenever you get there, brother. So, yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, I got to get draws or whatever. So, you know, the caregiver saw me and she was like, yeah, you looking good? And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah. I mean, I wasn't like, yeah, I know, but, you know, it was the expected response. I wasn't like surprised, but it was. I'm not going to say humbling, but, you know, not embarrassing, but, you know, you kind of go, oh, stop. You know, I really was like, oh, just a little bit. Okay, stop. He's like, oh, look at you. You going to go out and get you a woman or something like that. And when she said that triggered me. That's what this whole podcast is probably meant to, why I cut it on. When she said, oh, you going to go out and get you a woman or blah, 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 this or that. I mean, that's almost a natural response. I mean, that's just, you know, that it wasn't surprising. I should have known it was coming. But when she said it, it triggered me. And I'm triggered, I'm just being overstated. But I was like, no. And for some reason, I felt the obligation or the need or the desire to clear that up. I don't know why. I could have just let it go. You know, it didn't make any difference if I said something or not. But for some reason, I was like, no. It's like, I don't even want that idea around me or associated with or even manifesting in my head or whatever. But I was like, nope. Then I, of course, went on to overly explain why in my way of, you know, answering too much of the question, taking it too deep. But I didn't get too crazy. I was like, no, I'm the idea of me obligated was the word that came to my mind. The idea of obligation and responsibility came to my, that's probably what made me jump and go, whoa. That idea. Now, there's no doubt that I want to look good. There's no doubt I want to be that guy that walk in the room that everybody look at. There's no doubt about that. For whatever reason. It's not like I'm trying to have sex with nobody. It's like I ain't trying to get this. I ain't trying to get that. I ain't trying to do that. But for some reason, I want to have a look. And not just of confidence, but, you know, to get those looks. I probably can't even tell you why. I really probably can't even tell you why, to be honest. And I probably should think about it. But I want to walk in there and be that guy. One of the reasons I say is because it helps me to facilitate getting other things in life. Just in life general. Attractive, it's easy. Life is easier when you're attractive. You get more things. People treat you different. And I always say, I always think or say, yeah, I'm gonna look attractive, I'm gonna do this or that. You know. And whenever I ask for, you know, Jeffrey TV, I'm trying to build this, build that. If I need this, if I need that. When you're attractive and you go ask somebody for it, or you need something, you usually get a positive response. So that smile, I did used to say this. I said, if I was to ever lose weight when I was fat, I was like 300 pounds. I said, if I was to ever lose weight with my smile and personality, I'd be unstoppable. If I was down, I said that, and that's one of the goals. I do remember thinking that a lot. And that was one of the reasons I did it. Because even back then, even before Jeffrey TV was created, there was something I was building. It was something that I wanted to build. It was something that I knew that I wanted to develop. It was like a place I wanted to go. This is before the internet. But I knew there was maybe even a legacy or impact or something that I wanted to achieve. And I knew part of the underlying tools was to look good, personality, smile, articulate, smart enough to understand how the structure works, how to talk to people, who to talk to. Because when I got laid off from Avicom, I went back to school. This was in 95, so I was 32 years old when I went back to get my bachelor's degree. In the core curriculum at DeVry, you know, to get your bachelor's, it was like economics, physics, civics, and stuff like that, critical theory. I was taking these classes thinking, God damn, they teaching me everything I need to rule the world. They are giving me, this is the roadmap to how the system works, literally. Because since I had already worked in the industry for maybe, 10, 12 years, I understood manufacturing, I understood supply chain, sort of, I understand how things work, managers, I saw how all that worked. Administrative stuff, I went to school, so I knew how to, I knew how this worked, that worked, paperwork, dealing with the county, the state. So when I went back after, a decade of going through that experience, and then getting a lesson on how it all works, it blew my mind. It blew my mind. I went home, and I made a big giant poster, using a computer poster. On a printer, how you can say print this and poster size, and it would print it across like 10 or 12 8 by 12 letter size things. It was huge, and I put it on my wall. It was the diagram that I created of how the money flows through our economic system. I had legislative up there, I had this manufacturer, I had it all laid out. It was just so beautiful to me. They taught me everything I needed to know. And I knew part of that was, I knew I needed that. And I said, okay. Well, I started looking good too, with this and that and this, I'll be unstoppable. That's probably my underlying drive to lose weight and be fit and look good. That and the fact that after I lost weight the first time, I went on Dexatrim, went down from like 300 down to 240 or 230. I was doing it the wrong way. I was taking Dexatrim and starving myself, but I don't care because I lost the weight. The attention that I got and the response from that was life-changing. How people looked at me differently, how I felt, how I walked around, the confidence I had after losing that weight, the ability to buy regular clothes, walk in a department store and just buy clothes off the rack, don't have to look for 2X, 3Xs, didn't have to go to big and tall. You know, it led me to get my hair cut. I used to get haircuts, believe that. I used to actually go get my hair cut at a barber. I didn't have waves, but and I really didn't have a line. I don't know what he did. I think I had a line maybe twice, but you know, I was just that guy, and I like walking around being that way. Back then, I might have been trying to get some, trying to do this and do that with whoever was available or around. But now, getting back to the point, I just don't want to be obligated. I told the caregiver yesterday, I was like, I only want to do what I want to do. Uncompromised. I was like, I can't compromise anymore. And I was telling it to her, but I was actually preaching to y'all. I was actually practicing, going through it in my head, delivering a soliloquy or delivering a, not speech, but, you know, or whatever. And I realized just now I do that. Somebody asks me a question, I'll go through it like I'm on stage at a speaking podium answering a question like Ben Shapiro, Mark Walsh, Matt Walsh. I picked those two on purpose. If you know who I'm talking about, you probably know why. I will say this too about that situation. Those people, and I say those people because y'all know who I'm talking about, speak directly and clearly the way I understand it. Whether I agree with them or not, and for whatever reason I tend to agree with them on a lot of points, they speak directly and clearly. Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, there's a couple of them. They just speak, and for some reason, maybe the MSNBCs and CNBCs don't speak as clearly and deliberately as I like to hear. That's why I watch Rumble. That's where Tucker Carlson's going to go. But the whole Tucker Carlson thing, we can talk about that in another podcast, I guess. I guess we'll talk about here. The whole thing, the consensus on Tucker Carlson was, you know, everybody acknowledges he was great. He was good. He was great at what he did. And what he did was, he pushed the envelope and said things that you're not supposed to say. Even on Fox News, even here, he just mainstream is not supposed to say that. And he would push it. He would push the narrative and come up with some stuff that may or may not be true. He would say it as if it was true to his audience. Maybe not even knowing, because he just wanted to speak frankly like I do. I used to get accused of, you know, stating fact when I was just trying to get out what I was thinking. Well, you know, because without clarifying and saying without saying what I believe or this possibility. And he would come up with some narratives that were way out there. And one of the consensus is that he should be allowed to do that. He should be allowed to be wrong. But since it's a business model and Fox News is a business venture, it's all about money, so a decision was made. But anyhow. So, and I was telling her, I can't compromise. The idea of me compromising, or the idea, just the, even the idea of having my freedom infringed upon triggered me. I like using the word triggered. I want to be like the left. I want to use the word triggered. I want to be triggered too. Damn it. But, and in my case, it might be true. Some of this stuff does hit me like, Nope. And that's kind of what I was. My dear was nope. I don't. I don't want to be associated with that thought. I don't even want to think that I even pretended to be associated with that thought. I just want to do what I want to do so severely that it probably can't be healthy. And I'll take that. I'll take that risk. I have to live that risk. I have no choice. I got no choice but to live that risk. Right now, the way I feel. And the question becomes, well, what happens if you get old? Who's going to take care of you when you're old? You're going to wish you had a companion. I'm like, well, you'll probably be right. But still, I can't. I'm like, I just can't. I can't. I can't be that person. I can't. I keep thinking about, I want to go home, do my music. I want to work on my web pages. And even though I don't do that stuff a lot, sometimes I just want to do nothing. And doing nothing may be the biggest reason that I want autonomy and no obligation. It's like traveling alone. Oh my God. Traveling alone. Oh my God. When I first started traveling alone back in 1995, when I went to that Super Bowl, without Andrea, who was my best friend ever. If I have a best friend, I gotta say she's my best friend ever. She passed away a few years ago. Me and her, she was definitely my best friend by far. Me and her shared everything. Me and her would just hang out. She had boyfriends. I didn't want nobody back then either. I guess the loose way you could say is we were friends with benefits. Like whatever happened, happened. If it didn't, it didn't. There'd be times when she'd go out and say, you better go see your boy. Yeah, I knew all her boyfriend's names. We would discuss them. You know, she'd come over. She'd have a key. I'd be sitting at my computer in my bedroom. You know, doing what we're working on, whatever I was working on way back in 95, 96, whatever. You know, doing my computers and working on this, working on that outside of work. And she'd just have a key. She'd come in. I wouldn't even look up. She'd put her stuff down. She'd be talking. I hear her, you know, yeah, whatever. She started to cook. And, you know, we'd have burritos or whatever. She'd get dressed. You know, it was her weekend. Away from the kids and away from stuff. She'd get undressed and shower and lay on the bed because the computer's in the bedroom. She'd lay on the bed and talk. We'd listen to music. And just she was able to just be free. So she used to come up a lot just to, you know, have her some her time. Because she knew I wasn't going to obligate her for too much, if anything. In fact, most of the things between me and her was like, leave me alone. Go away. Don't you want to go cook something? Don't you get one of your boyfriends call? God, I forget their name. Remember, I forget the dude's name, the one that was when we was hanging out there in Azusa. But, you know, she'd go see him, come back, get in the bed. I'd be like, yeah, you know, we'd be playing like that and whatever. Because we was just that, you know, that was the best relationship I ever had. That was the best relationship I ever had. She would come in, put on music, she would DJ. We'd be like, listen to the same music. Well, not the same, but we'd had to go back and forth. She'd pick some stuff, I'd pick some stuff. I let her DJ and I'd be on my computer and we'd just talk while I'm working. That was heaven. And I guess I could tie that into obligation and responsibility or as far as relationships go. Because I know relationships. I've seen not a lot of men. Some people can get into relationships knowing that they're one way, knowing that they're going to get what they want and forget what the other person wants. And they can actually, you know, function that way. They have no problem functioning that way. Some people get in relationships not telling the truth and live that way. And there's some relationships that are built on the fact that we're not telling each other the truth. We understand that we're not telling each other the truth, but we just sidestep that. You do you, I do you. And it may work for them. I'm not saying, you know, this don't work, that don't work. It's not about that. It's not about, you know, this today, yay or nay, good or bad, left or right. It's about whatever works. It's all different kinds work. And so you really can't say.
Wait.
But, I mean, what could be dysfunctional to one person, one couple, could work for another. But I got to a point in 1989, based on relationships, where I got caught up in something where I wasn't completely truthful. I wasn't lying. I wasn't saying I wasn't doing this. I just didn't say that I was doing something. And I got caught up in it, and I had to come clean. And I swore, I could remember standing in that shower, 66 South San Marino Avenue. Said, I ain't gonna never lie again. I ain't gonna never, ever, ever lie again. I don't ever wanna feel like this ever. And pretty much I haven't. And another thing, in that kind of same situation, relationship I was in a situation where I didn't wanna go home. I said, I never will ever, ever get myself into something like this or get to this point again. I didn't want to go home. Get off work, you didn't want to go home. Life lessons. Some of them can only be taught through pain. Like me passing out and busting up my mouth. And look where I'm at now. Under 195 pounds. Looking good, feeling good. Clean myself out. So, what did I say? A lie, yeah. In relationships, it's all or nothing. I'm gonna tell you everything, and I expect you to tell me everything. And some relationships aren't supposed to be that way. I mean, supposed to doesn't matter. It's the wrong way to put it, but it could be that when you traditionally, when you meet someone, you're not supposed to tell them everything. I mean, to put it, you know, bluntly. In fact, a long time ago, a coworker at Artisan, I think it was Linda Buckin, Linda, asked me, said, you know, I just met a guy. And she was going on, you know, tell him. I was like, tell him everything. Tell him everything right now. As soon as you meet him, tell him everything, every little drop. And she did. And she came back to me. She said, you know, I did it. And it worked. And we're together. They were like really strong. You know, because she had some stuff that she was kind of, you know, leery about telling somebody. I said, tell him everything. Get it out now. And that's just the way I do it. I mean, I don't got nothing to hide anyway. But I'm forthcoming with everything, and some people aren't. And they may be the traditional way for a relationship to begin. Not to be, you know, oh, you don't need to know that. We don't need to, you know, we don't need to talk about that yet. I don't believe that. I go right to it. In fact, I was on eHarmony more than once where my openness scared the hell out of some people. Just scared the hell out of them. I was like, oh, okay, that lets me know. You know, lets me know that you ain't the one. And it's tough. Some people, you meet some people. I met people who, you know, who could get with it and handle it. And it worked for me. Your harmony worked for me a couple of times. Well, once for sure. I think, yeah, once. Really well, in fact. So it came because this person, it was the Russian. It was this person. She was more open than I was. She was more open and direct. She was like a computer, open up and direct. There was no filter. You ask this person a question, you got an answer, the straightest answer I had ever seen in my life back. I was like, oh my God. And some of it was like, whoa. It took me a while to get used to it. Even me, and I was Mr. Open and Honest, you know, Mr. Blah, 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 everything. she came back with some stuff. I was like, whoa. Because then I knew if you ask her, you're going to get an answer. But I also knew, and probably even to this day, if there's something that I really, really want some insight on or some research or whatever, I'll ask her. Because I used to ask her stuff knowing she'd do the research or whatever. And I mean research. You know, it might not take it long. It might not take her hours or hours or days or whatever. But she would come back with an answer and links to substantiate what she meant and what she was talking about. And I was like, damn. I used to love bouncing stuff off her. But because we didn't agree on a lot of stuff. And that was the fun part to me. And we didn't agree. She was much more conservative than I was back then. She was much more, I don't know if conservative was the word. I don't know what the word was. But she was much more, less liberal, less woke. No, not woke. Woke ain't the word. Less I don't know what the word is. Liberal, conservative. She was more right. But no, she wasn't right. She wasn't right wing, but she was more right than I was. I was Occupy Movement. I was this, that. This is before I knew it. One time with her, I said, I'm down here with my people. I was a Occupy Movement. I'm down here with my people. She was like, them ain't your people. And I got mad. I was like, they are, blah, blah, blah. 2 years later, I was like, she was right. Who are these weirdos? Once I got down there and got amongst them, the stuff that she was telling me about them, I found out was true. It was, I mean, loosely put, it was like whiny, you know, feeling like a victim, being attacked, wanting everybody to help them out, do something for them, you know. And I was like, no, this ain't me. You know, this, you're right, this ain't, but it was a fun experience. You know, we both went out to the Occupy Movement. I took her out. You know, she wasn't used to going out to stuff. She wasn't even used to going to the Big Lots or 99-cent store. This is where she came from. She had never been to a 99-cent store before. She's like, you don't go in there. Because you know everything ain't going to be 99-cent. I was like, it is. She was like, no, it ain't. So I drug her in there. Literally had to drag her in there. And she was like, oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, she been like, oh, my God. But you could tell she kind of like, huh? And she looked up. And you could see her doing the math. How can they have this product here for 99 cents? You can see her checking out the product, the quality of it, the brand names, and this and that. You know, she was like, I was like, I told you. You know, everything is now. She's like, you go to your 99-cent store. Go to your 99-cent store and get this, that, because she knew the price was good. You know, stuff she wanted. You go to your 99-cent store. One time I took her in the Big Lots. They were going out of business. So the place was tore up. I mean, the shelves, like, almost falling on the ground. It was like the last days. We got there, like, late. And she almost had a traumatic reaction to it. She did not like seeing that disarray. And stuff like that. I forget where I was going with that story, but that was one of them. Yeah, she was like, no, you ain't. She said, you ain't the Occupy people. I was like, it was my people. She was like, nope, no, they ain't. And they later come to find it. I'm much more right, or I'm probably much more conservative than I realize. Where somebody said, when you're young, you're supposed to be liberal. And as you get older, you should be more conservative. Or you better be more conservative. Because it naturally comes down, you start getting assets. You have assets and property. You want to protect. You ain't trying to give away everything. You didn't want to pay a whole bunch of taxes on stuff. So you're more conservative. It's like, hey, I worked and I fought and I got mine. Everybody else should. And if they don't, that means they ain't meant to have it. That's how I feel. But anyway. And the thing about that too, the Russian, Andrea was completely different. Andrea was completely different. She was, we used to, I used to call her, she's a white black girl. And she, you know, she was kind of raised around the hood. She knew people from the hood. She could cook like she's from the hood. You know, she knew the ins and outs, but she wasn't a part of that. She was almost like a, you know, like a princess, kind of, you know, like, oh, above it all. You would never get a straight answer out of her. She'd never give an answer. You would never, ever get a straight answer out of her. I would have to barrage her with questions just to get to a point. She just wasn't wired like that. And that may or may not have fit with my personality at the time, to where it was about me. She was a good supporter role. In fact, she used to even say that she the best passenger. She the world's best passenger, and she was. Oh my God, we used to go places and do stuff. She was the world's best passenger. Food, you know, have your stuff ready for you, navigate, music, DJ, don't be talking too much. Just, you know, whatever. She was the best passenger. And she took pride in that. Whereas I didn't have respect for that position. Back then, I didn't know how to have respect for things that I didn't understand or I couldn't do. Like, there's no way, like, especially with people who believe in Jesus and God. You know, thank you, Jesus people. I didn't understand. I guess I could say I didn't understand how to have respect for that. That's probably a strong way to put it, and you know, probably a good soundbite. It might be a bit much, but I didn't appreciate the differences in people. That's a good way to put it. I didn't appreciate the differences in people who, you know, weren't like me. And I realized, you know, over decades that we need people of all kinds. Everybody can't be like me. Would nothing get done? I mean, a lot of social activities wouldn't get done. But over time, that might make for a stronger society where those who aren't relying on help now die out. And those who can take care of themselves succeed. So all of a sudden now you don't have the need to help people less, you know, because let's face it, a lot of people depended on social services. You know, it's probably a whole generation, not generation, but a whole part of our society whose lineage was raised on social welfare. They don't know any way out. You know, it's just a way out just isn't in their horizon or their worldview. It's just the way you're supposed to be. You're supposed to have babies when you're 13, 14 years old. Go down and sign up on the county. Whatever. I don't know if that's still true, but, you know, that's probably what some of the more right-wing conservative people would say. And I don't know if it's true or not. And regardless if they're right-wing or conservative, you know, they could be Satan himself. If what they said is true, it's true. It's still true, no matter who said it. No matter how much you like them or don't like them. No matter what they did or didn't do. No matter how many atrocities they may or may not have committed. No matter how many people they may have saved. If Jesus himself came down here and said something that wasn't true, it's still not true. I take that back because he's God. So no matter what he says is true. Literally. Even if he says black is white is black, that's the new thing. He's God. He determines what's right or wrong. It's not so much that what he said, it's not so much if what he said is logical, illogical, matches up or right or wrong, incorrect or inaccurate. It's the fact that he says it makes it that. That's the definition of God. But you get the point. Called ad hominem, but I forget where I was going with that. But yeah, Andrea, you couldn't get a straight answer out of her at all. She would do what she wanted to do. She had her own agenda, and if you know, I watch her and I see her, you know, not trying to get away with stuff. Oh, she would definitely be getting away with stuff, but her men's. She had men all over the place. I used to know them all by name, too. I didn't know them, meet them personally. But she would, you know, come and tell me, I said, oh, with it, so-and-so do this time. Oh, well, yeah, he going to be calling. He's going to be mad. You better get over there, blah, 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 you know. That was back in 95, 96. And we went our separate ways. That's when I met Jackie at Abacon. Me and her was together for a good while. Till I got laid off. And then I went to school. Had my kids out for the whole summer. And just kind of laid low. I think me and Jackie was, you know, dabbling here and there. Oh yeah, me and Jackie's kids. In fact, my kids met Andre's kids and Jackie's kids. You know, that's how I was back then. You know, me go to SeaWorld and do this and do that. Had parties. You know, not all together. You know, one separate didn't came after the other. So I've been in a relationship. It was a time I was in a relationship like 20 straight years. You know, I went from like one to the other to the other to the other. But not like that, like that. But, you know, pretty much a little break. Nothing like I was running out trying to get into. You know, just found cool ways to make it work. But Jackie, though, I remember Jackie. It was like Christmas holiday or something. And it was some mistletoe or something. And I was kind of into Jackie's friend, whose name just happened to be Andrea. And for whatever reason, for all the wrong reasons, looking back for all the wrong reasons I was. And for some reason, Jackie came over there, held us a mistletoe or something, and she gave me a kiss on the lips with tongue. That was it. I look back at that and I say, men are easy. That was it. I remember walking back, talking to Thomas Johnson. I was like, I was stunned. I was like, Jackie just kissed me. I didn't know how to process it. It wasn't that I didn't like it. It was like instantly I started liking her. It was weird. And me and her went on for a few years after that. And then after that, me and her went on for years. I went to school, got my degree, got my training, got a job at Cyber Media, I think it was, doing some kind of I don't even know what I was doing. It was technical. Doing spreadsheet. I was doing something. I forget what it was. That's where I met the Ukrainian. And me and her, that was really, really special to me. And looking back, it never could have worked. But it was so real to me. It was so special. A real Ukrainian, just gorgeous. Gorgeous girl. Just everything that I always thought Eastern European. It was just like, oh my God. But that was fun too. And then, you know, since we talk, and then check this out. Maybe after, and then before, let me see, before Andrea, I think I was married. Of course, I was married. And then I was with a family friend for a while. See, I was just, and then I went from my ex-wife to this family friend that I met at my grandmother's funeral. That's the kind of person I was. I was wearing suits back then. I'm at my grandmother's funeral. And I sent her an email, and we hooked up for a little while. And then we even ended up living together. We had an apartment, living together. We was going to get married. Even had an announcement in the paper. Still got it. My father laminated it. Still got it. Got those laminations. But that didn't work out. And I moved out. And Jackie had kissed me right in between where, you know, me and her family friend decided I was going to move on and we were done, like at the end. But I told Jackie, I said, I can't, you know, I ain't going, you know, we ain't doing nothing until, you know, this is clear or whatever. I ain't even entertaining the idea because that's after 1989, when I said, I ain't gonna lie no more. And then me and Jackie said, so we went one to the other, to the other, to the other, literally. Boom, ba boom, ba boom, ba boom. And then after that, I forget, you know, the rest of it, but then I think I went 10 years celibate even. I think I went 10 years celibate. Nothing. I didn't want to be bothered. I wrote a book. I was getting so much done. I was on it. I had no obligation. I was just like free. Because for me, and I know it's probably not true, but in my mind, to have a sexual relationship with somebody, you got to invest. You got to put in work. You know, for me, you got to put in work. You got to, like, put effort in. And I've never put forth effort. Well, I have, but, you know, not like some of these brothers I didn't see out there just going after it. I never learned how to do that. But, so, but I was like 10 years. I wrote a book. I got myself together. I was working. I was focused. I had an online friend from New Mexico, Karen. Me and her used to chat every day. And every now and then I chat with, you know, all the, you know, other past relationships. You know, I wasn't like living in a bubble, but I was, you know, I kept a good distance between me and any relationship obligations. And even from that, to kind of segue and jump into a little farther part, even from that, it got to the point where I didn't even want to have friends. I was even keeping friends at a distance, because I didn't want people calling me, hey, what you doing? Hey, can I come over? I didn't even want that. That's when I learned how to even keep just casual, I keep a limit on even casual friendships. Let people know, no, I'm not that person. Don't think that you can call me, or I'm gonna respond to you, or if I go here, go there, I'm gonna let you know how I'm doing. No, not me. In fact, I even told my mother. I said, you better look on Facebook or message me. Cause she's like, call when you, nope, I can't. I do too much. I go too many places. I can't take on that responsibility. I can't take on that responsibility. Oh, you didn't call. Damn right I didn't call. I wouldn't say damn right to her. But, you know, I'd be like, nope, I didn't call. So, you know, I'm here, there. I ain't got time to be worried about all this and all that. Not worried about, you know, yeah, I ain't got to worry about you worrying about me. So I tell people, no, don't put me in there. I don't want to be part of that. Then they feelings get hurt. I'm like, and that's why I don't want to be entangled in that. And that's where I'm at now. And from that, I've learned to find a deep euphoric happiness in being by myself and being alone. And it's not really by myself. It's probably just being alone. Or one of those, you know what I mean? It's probably just being independent, I guess. Severely independent. And I'll say this again, as I said before, as I've said many times, the highest you can go, those peaks of human experience with love and excitement and entertainment come with other people. But they can't be sustained, even in a relationship. Even in the perfect marriage, where, well, I don't know about that. There's probably some cases where it is like that in a perfect marriage. You don't have to be perfect in a marriage. I take the perfect part off, in a marriage. But there's going to be ups and downs. I think there has to be ups and downs anyway in life, period. So any relationship is going to have ups and downs. And that's what makes the ups good. Those downs. So it's kind of a, you know, it's like a working scenario, working plan. There's ups and downs. But when I found that being alone and finding a deep happiness in being by myself, that could be sustained much longer than if I was to be in a relationship with the peaks. Because you know, you go up, you peak up, you come up peak, but you're gonna come down. And you're gonna fight, you're gonna argue, you're gonna have disagreements, and that's part of it. It makes it better. And right now I'm at the point where I can't get vested enough to argue. I'll just leave. And I know that about me, and I like that about me, and that's the way I want it right now. If it gets too tough, it's over. Not over, but, you know, let's think about not doing this anymore again. And I actually used to think all relationships should be that way. That marriage for life thing is crazy. I used to say marriage licenses should have to be renewed every 2-3 years. Is that marriage for life? You don't know. You don't know what you're going to be in 5-10 years. You don't know what the other person's going to be. And to commit, that's crazy. I mean, I did it. And I can't say I wouldn't do it again. I probably could. I probably could say that I wouldn't do it again. I mean, I'd get married again for financial stabilities or the advantages of being married business-wise. But as far as relationship goes, relationships I was in are always built on a relationship and not what they were called or what they were perceived to be by the state or anything. I'm just talking. Hope this is recording. I should stop it. In fact, I am. Damn, I just did 47 minutes. That's 47 minutes. So, that's, you know, about the whole being obligated. And this whole Jeffrey TV thing, I'm legacy, whatever I want to call it, I'm building. It's just, you know, I got music. I got over a decade of music that I think is good enough to put together and to put out there. I got the tools. I built the studio, the mechanism to get this stuff out. I got the platform. I got DistroKid. I mean, everything is in place, you know. But everything is in place. I've been building it since 1995. And now I just got to funnel stuff through the system. System already, you know, put together. I got my podcast out there. They're on Spotify, you know, and Apple and all that. I know how to get music out there. I got songs published. I don't even know if it's published. I don't know what it is. I just put them out there. People can buy them if they want them. Only like 4 of them. And I could have hundreds. I should have hundreds out there. So I'm going to work on that stuff. And then still developing my philosophy within the podcast and my writing and my website. And then eventually gather all that together in a more coherent work, be it online or in a book, publish it. Get it out there, hopefully to, you know, be a part of humanity as long as humanity is around. And that's basically what I want to think about and do all the time. Pretty much, unless I'm at a P-Funk show or eating or watching TV. I mean, I'm 60. That's what I told the caregiver. I was like, I'm 60. What, I got 20 years left? I can't compromise. I ain't got time for, I'm good. I ain't mad at nobody no more. Not that I ever really was mad at any particular person or any particular thing. I may have been frustrated and unsatisfied in general because I wasn't where I wanted to be. And that drove me, probably without me even realizing it, that probably drove me to accomplishing to get the things to put together over a long run. I'm talking about a long run, 20, 30 years. I look at stuff I did in 95, in 92, 93, 94 that reverberate into what I'm doing now. Stuff I learned back then, I'm still incorporating into what I'm doing. And it's almost like I foresaw all this. I worked towards it with a faith that it's going to be something without even knowing what it was going to be. And as certain things came out, technology changed, the internet came, this came, music recording home studios came, I adapted. I brought on that technology. Started with the first crystal radio. I knew electronics was going to be something. Something in me told me, hey, this electronic stuff is for real. This is going to be the future. You know, I'm sure there was other things where I said, hey, this is going to be a future. And they just fell off like mood rings or yo-yos. Y'all remember when yo-yos were popular? Y'all remember when everybody had a yo-yo? I remember yo-yos was popular way back. It was like a fad. I had a butterfly. Duncan was a Duncan. It was a butterfly that where your thumb and your finger would like go in between the things. And it had the yo-yos with the lights on them and all that. Clackers, you know, all that stuff. But I picked electronics and I've been riding that dog ever since. Ever since I got that, like I said, that first crystal radio, I knew that was going to be the future. I saw computers coming. I saw CB radios. I saw that craze coming. I jumped on it. Or the craze jumped on me. I'm not sure. But I was there for it. And the heyday, even when black people in the neighborhood had CB radios, black people had their own way of talking. You know, had their own style and cadence of talking. Pariah? Break, channel six. Break, channel six. This is Alley Cat 23. They would talk more. We would talk different. I remember Bodacious Devil was one. He had like a big antenna, big linear amplifier. He would like broadcast. He could shut everybody down. All the black people used to be on channel six. He would be able to shut everybody down. And he had his own style of talking. They would say 410 instead of 10-4. Yeah, it was cool. I was in on that. And internet came. I was all over that. So it came down like that. And then you got... What was I saying? I got the strike. I think Howie was hollering at me. I guess he wanted to be on Jeffrey TV too. I don't know where he was hollering me from. I look back, I didn't see nobody. But, so I was on that, all fit into a journey. Then, oh yeah, and I got my first computer, my first real computer. And I set that up to be a bulletin board where people can dial in. This was even before Prodigy and before CompuServe. I had built a BBS service. I learned, figured out how to do that. Went and did the research. Like I used to go into the library, study crystal radios, how to build crystal radios and catalogs and all that. I would do the research. The internet came, AOL, Prodigy came, and chat rooms. The chat rooms were censored. I didn't like that. The internet came, uncensored. Oh my God. You mean I could be uncensored? And nobody can tell me, oh my God, I want one. PewPunk1.com. 1997. 10 years later, JeffreyTV.com. 2007. Anyhow, that's how it goes. Or that's how it went. Or that's how it is. My name is Jeffrey Scott Mitchell. Right here on a Friday. I'm Jason Mel too. How about Fridays or whatever? Having 2 days off makes a difference. Having two days off makes a difference. Like next Saturday, I gotta work. So that means I gotta take a day off in the middle of the week or something. And I won't get 2 days off. And over time, that wears you out. It catches up with you. See, tomorrow I have 2 days off. And since I'm out here at a remote location, I ain't gonna have that much to do. So I'm gonna have to sit my ass down. Can't eat, can't do this or that. So I'm gonna figure something out. Hell, I might ride back into LA just to ride. Or I don't know. What I should do is figure something to do out here. I'm gonna figure something to do out here since I'm out here. If you don't wanna, I don't wanna come out here and not take advantage of what's out here, drive all the way back home, you know, to where something I can do all the time. It's like going on vacation and eating at McDonald's, which I've done before. In fact, when I went to Moscow, when I got into Moscow to eat, the only thing open was McDonald's. And I actually tried to look. It was like late at night, and I was looking, trying to look to see if anything was open. McDonald's was the only thing. So I walked down to McDonald's, and it's better. McDonald's in other countries is better, or Europe, or wherever, it's better. It was McDonald's in Russia by Red Square was better. But I usually don't try to do that. I try to eat the local food. Like when I go to New Orleans, I would eat at this called City Diner in Metairie. So they used to have this crab bowl, sourdough, crab, and sauce, and cheese. And I just get one of those every time I went there. They closed. But I'm sure I can find the same thing somewhere else. New Orleans. I love New Orleans. The humidity, people, laid-backness, the river, the vibe, and the food. Like anywhere you go, the food is good. It's ridiculous. Like no matter where you eat at, food is good. House of Blues food is good. It don't matter. It's like no matter where you go, the food is good. Even if you go to a commercial place, food is good. Anyway, my name is Jeffrey. Swinging on y'all two times. For me, and for the funk. And for every elementary particle that has ever existed in this or in any universe that ever was, is, or will be. The totality of it all, y'all. A theory of universe and a hypothesis of all as one. My name is Sheffield.